from WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Newspapers have had a rough stretch since the internet changed the world. But since Donald Trump was elected president, readership numbers have jumped at the New York Times, Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and more. People hungry for newspaper reporting and editorials. Some very striking editorials saying things about a sitting president that maybe we've never read before. This hour On Point, editorial page editors on President Trump, the man and his policies. Later this hour, we will look at the resignation of three journalists at CNN over a retracted story regarding the Russia investigation. But first, editorial page editors on President Trump. Three editors with us today. From Los Angeles, Nicholas Goldberg joins us, editorial page editor for the Los Angeles Times. In April already, before 100 days, his newspaper published a six-part editorial series headlined Our Dishonest President. It's been compiled into a book that comes out July 4th, Independence Day. Nick Goldberg, welcome to On Point.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
It's good to have you. From Miami, Florida, Nancy Ankrum joins us, editorial page editor for the Miami Herald. Her paper has been often critical of President Trump on health care, climate change, the Russia investigation, but they've been pleased with his plan to recalibrate the U.S. relationship with Cuba, some other nods to the president as well. Nancy Ankrum, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
And with us from Washington is Timothy Carney, commentary editor for the Washington Examiner. He oversees a desk of commentary writers and crafts the publication's editorial vision. They've been pleased with President Trump's nomination of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court, as well as pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, his stance on NATO. Tim Carney, welcome to On Point.
Thank you for having me.
Nick Goldberg, can I come first to you? I mean, this series was as two-fisted as it gets. It got an enormous readership around the world. You write in the series, Our Dishonest President, you said it was no secret during the campaign that Donald Trump was a narcissist and a demagogue. You're pulling no punches here. Who used fear and dishonesty to appeal to the worst in American voters. The Times, L.A. Times, called him unprepared and unsuited for the job he was seeking, said his election would be a catastrophe. And as we go on to read this editorial series, Nick, you pretty much decided in April that it is or was or remains a catastrophe, immensely dangerous. I mean, just on and on. A man so unpredictable, so reckless, so petulant, so full of blind self-regard, so untethered to reality, it's impossible to know where his presidency will lead or how much damage he will do to our nation. Take us through your thought process, Nicholas Goldberg, that in April already had you ready to come out swinging that hard in your editorial.
Well, it wasn't like we had first seen Donald Trump on the day he was elected.
Yep.
We'd been writing about this man from the beginning of the Republican primaries. We were one of the earlier papers to come out and write that we thought he was unsuited for the job, unfit for the job, unqualified for the job. Back during the primaries, then we wrote our endorsement of Hillary Clinton. In that, we said that we thought that a Trump presidency would be disastrous. Then the president was elected, and we began writing editorial after editorial saying, you know, oh, my goodness, we don't like this decision. We don't like this appointment. We don't like this executive order. We don't like this tweet. And at some point, even though it was relatively early in the administration, we decided it was time to pull it together to try to write something more sweeping and comprehensive and connect the dots for readers. I don't think this is our final judgment on President Trump. You know, he's going to be president for a while, and we're continuing to watch. And if he does things that we agree with, we're happy to say so. But yeah, we wrote a tough. Critical editorial, as we think befits the situation. We think we're in a very unusual and dangerous time.
And not just one editorial, but this whole series and the headlines kind of tell the story, Why Trump Lies, Trump's Authoritarian Vision, Conspiracy Theorist-in-Chief, Trump's War on Journalism. Conventional wisdom has become that nobody reads papers anymore. Nobody pays attention to what newspapers have to say. But not on this, not in your case. Describe the response you've had to this. I mean, it's coming out in a book now. But what was the response to this series, Nick?
Well, the response to the series has been overwhelming. You know, we write editorials every day, and they get, you know, a few thousand people read them, or 10,000, or 50,000, or 100,000 if they're really, really good. This series went viral. I've never been involved in anything that's gone viral to this extent. The first day of the series alone was read by more than 4 million people. That means that it was read not just in our usual circulation area, but all over the country and all over the world. It was read by in red states and in blue states by people who agreed with it and people who didn't. So it got an enormous amount of response. There's always pressure to write strong editorials, you know, harsh editorials, tough editorials, because, you know, people are more likely to read them.
Yep.
Than they are likely to read things that are sort of in the middle or on the fence or which hem and haw and say on the one hand, on the other hand. But that's not why we did this. We had strong consensus within our editorial board that these were the things we wanted to say about the president, and the things we said resonated with readers.
And tough judgments, talking about President Trump's steps, saying these are immensely dangerous developments around the Trump administration, which threaten to weaken this country's moral standing in the world, imperil the planet, and reverse years of slow but steady gain by marginalized or impoverished Americans, in the L.A. Times. Nick Goldberg, stand by there in Los Angeles. I want to go to Miami, Florida. Nancy Ankrum, editorial page at the Miami Herald, editor of the editorial page. Nancy, do you have a feeling that Americans have, for whatever reason, sort of come in from the storm of the Twitterverse and are paying more attention to what traditional publications have to say about the world and about the Trump presidency in particular?
Absolutely. Not only have they come in from the Twitterverse, not necessarily abandoning it, but they've also awakened from their coma in terms of civic engagement. And we are seeing it here in Miami in the number of people who are diving in to run for office, who are really looking around and seeing the challenges in this community. This is a very glitzy and glamorous community, but it is also a very poor one. That's why we are ground zero for Obamacare registration. So yes, people are waking up, realizing that they have not been engaged, and it doesn't matter what side of the political fence they might be falling on.
Are you, has your page come down in the middle or on the fence when it comes to Trump? I mean, I'm looking here at headlines that you've got in the Miami Herald, editorials, "The Error of Exiting the Paris Accord." We get it. Another one, "In Going After Comey, Sessions, Mueller, Trump Looks Like He Has Something to Hide," from your editorials. But also, you've got a headline, "President Trump Right to Recalibrate Obama's Opening to Cuba." You've got one, "Trump Administration Gives Young Undocumented Dreamers a Reprieve." Are you coming down on the fence? How would you describe it, Nancy?
Oh, no, I think giving Trump his due where we agree with him is not coming down on the fence. It is making sure that we do not become a knee-jerk commentator saying everything he does is wrong. Now, a lot that he has done is questionable, is troubling, is very, very disturbing. But we would give anyone his or her due when we agree. We have to also take into account who our community is. That's really who we serve. We think that our voice, our editorial voice, resonates the loudest when we take into account the benefits or the dangers to our community when any president changes policy, when any president puts forth a vision or an idea, and Congress, too, for that matter. In the terms of dreamers, we are a community where dreamers live, where dreamers live in fear, where dreamers have been very vocal about securing the ability to stay here, to not be separated from their families. And pre-Trump, we have supported their cause. So we did not change. Nothing changed there. Absolutely the same with Cuba. We were very supportive of President Obama's thaw with the island. However, over the months, as a year passed, as a year and a half passed, we expressed concern that the United States was handing over so much in terms of tourism, in terms of money, in terms of access, and Cuba giving absolutely nothing up. Absolutely nothing.
Nancy Ankrum, hold the thought there in Miami. We'll come back to it. Tim Carney in Washington with the Washington Examiner. You've got your weekly print publication. You're out every day online. What do you make of the numbers, the jump we've seen in readership of newspapers, Tim, which we thought we'll go to your opinions, and they're strong and they're quite often very favorable to President Trump. But what do you think of the jump in readership itself? What's going on there, Tim?
I do think that it was Nancy described it well as a people's reawakening of sort of civic engagement. And I definitely think it's a positive issue. I sometimes think that that civic engagement is directed too much towards national issues. And I hope and we are effectively a national our scope is entirely the federal government. And I hope that, you know, the L.A. Times and the Miami Herald, as well as, you know, the Austin American Statement and papers all over the country are seeing also people getting engaged on a local level, because I think that often when people focus on the national level, they're sort of banging their head against the wall on an issue that they can't control as much. And I think that's where why a lot of this focus ends up turning into an anger, because no matter what, Washington is going to be very distant and very insulated.
Why, coming back to traditional publications, when you can get 1,000 opinions a minute on Twitter, Tim?
I think that, again, that what we try to do, and I think a lot of our colleagues do the same, is if you're considered, if you're not firing off at every breaking news, but you're taking your time and considering it and laying it out when you've articulated it well, you're providing something that Twitter and cable news cannot. That's what we try to do with our editorials.
Timothy Carney, commentary editor at the Washington Examiner, please stand by there. Nancy Ankrum at the Miami Herald, Nicholas Goldberg at the Los Angeles Times. We've got some strong opinions appearing in the pages of America's newspapers and more right now. I'm Tom Ashbrook. We're talking with editorial page editors about the presidency of Donald Trump. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with editorial page editors about the presidency of Donald Trump, how they weigh it, judge it, and what their judgment means in a time when we have so many sources of opinion. Donald Trump, right out of the gate, this is the day after his inauguration, made clear he was ready for a war with the media.
The reason you're my first stop is that, as you know, I have a running war with the media. They are among the most dishonest human beings on earth.
Okay. At CIA headquarters in Langley, Virginia, and who was clapping and laughing there? A bunch of his entourage, among others, but most dishonest people on earth, maybe. But you've got newspaper readership way up. The month after, in November, with Donald Trump's election, New York Times, for example, got 130,000 new subscribers in that month, 10 times their average monthly growth. And they're not the only ones. Lots of papers have been seeing this. People are looking for something. We're talking with editorial page editors today. Timothy Carney is with us from the Washington Examiner. Nancy Ankrum is with us from the Miami Herald, editorial page editor there. Nicholas Goldberg is with us from the Los Angeles Times. His paper came out with a 6-part series, Tough as Nails on Donald Trump, in April. They put that together in a book. It was so popular. Millions reading this. It's called, bluntly, Our Dishonest President, coming out on July 4th, a week from today. Nancy, in your backyard in Miami, Ed's calling. Hi, Ed. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm interested in talking about the way that I read a newspaper. I read 4 newspapers per day. One of them is the Miami Herald, because I'm very proud of the Miami Herald's editorial page. But here's my point.
Yep.
I slow down. I think through every point. I'm reflective because I'm interested in making an informed decision that is in turn going to affect how I talk to others, how I interact with others, without being a binary kind of or attitudinal focus, you know, that I hear so much in so many places.
So it slows you down, makes you more thoughtful, and that's of particular value now. Why, Ed?
That's a particular value now because I see people entrenched in their opinions, and opinions are only meaningful to me if they're informed and if one listens to the opposing points of view.
Let's get some right here. Ed, I appreciate your call and the kudos there to your paper, Nancy Ankrum. Tim Carney, we haven't really dipped in yet to the flavor of the Washington Examiner's editorials. Nick Goldberg's paper has been profoundly critical of President Trump, deeply, profoundly critical. Nancy Ankrum has been quite critical as well at the Miami Herald, but tip of the hat sometimes. You've, in general, been rather favorable to this presidency. Examiner's fairly conservative, I guess, in its politics. How do you come to your opinions there, Tim?
I think to say that we are a conservative opinion page is 100% accurate. And we got a Republican president, but the least conservative nominee that the Republican Party has seen in decades, mm-hmm. since Richard Nixon, probably.
Meaning what exactly?
Meaning that he doesn't have the sort of philosophical grounding that when you – if you read our editorials, you will see us, you know, occasionally citing Hayek and arguing mm-hmm. from principles that the federal government ought to stay out of the economy. This is a president who will go and intervene if Carrier needs a bailout and promise to threaten people, you know, impose taxes on people he doesn't like. He doesn't have a background of being a pro-lifer or a social conservative or anything
even
like
free
that.
Even market necessarily.
Yeah, and he certainly doesn't share the sort of baseline conservative idea that of a sort of intellectual humility and a humility that the government's role – that government is an inherently dangerous tool. But that said, especially since he's come to office, he's done a lot of things that we agree with. And as Nancy was saying, we try to give him credit when he's right and criticize him when he's wrong. And we think that the biggest decision he's made, putting Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, was better than we expected. I'll admit, during the campaign, I did not trust he would deliver a judge in the frame of Antonin Scalia, as he said, but he did. And on things where we'll disagree with the LA Times and the Miami Herald, we've applauded him on getting out of the Paris Climate Accord, on a lot of the deregulatory efforts. And so in some ways, there's something very liberating about having a president who we know we're going to agree with him probably a majority of the time, but we're going to disagree with him a lot more than we thought we were going to disagree with a Republican president. And so to call things as we see them, not caring about whose side we're on, it's the side of the policy we're on, but also feeling that at times it's possible to have an influence with this president in a way that a conservative commentary page, it was harder to get through when we were telling Obama administration or a Democratic Congress, you guys are making a big mistake. Since there was so little shared principles, it was hard to be persuasive at all. Now here in the nation's capital, I think that we have the ability to move the administration without having to sidle up to them.
Headlines from the Washington Examiner on Paris, the Paris Climate Accord, judgment of Paris, walk away from it, affirming and agreeing with the president on that. On the president's running battle with James Comey, Trump was right to be angry at Comey. That's the headline from Washington Examiner headline just in the last few days. These newspaper editorials are getting read. They're getting read like crazy. Nick Goldberg's LA Times putting them in a book, and it's probably going to sell. I mean, millions read it online. Americans are hungry for something here. They're calling us right now from around the country. Rachel in Asheville, North Carolina. You're on the air with Miami, Los Angeles, Washington. What do you see, Rachel?
Hi. I mean, just as a young voter, this is the second election I was able to vote in. And, you know, growing up in the age of social media and you know, the internet in general, it's hard to figure out what's right and what's wrong. And this is the first time in my life that I've really, like, read the newspaper. And, it, you know, subscribing to the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, just in reading these editorials, it really just kind of reaffirms how I feel. And I feel like, you know, from coming from these news outlets that are so reliable and, you know, they've been around forever, it's been really eye-opening for me just as a young person.
Is it a different experience from you know, running through social media and picking and grabbing? If so, how, Rachel?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, you're getting information and it seems so unbiased yet pointed. You know, I mean, on social media, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, the people you follow are the people that you relate to, and you know it's just different.
And you're in. Quite, I mean, many people wrote your generation off, saying they're never going to read newspapers. They're just not going to do it. But you're doing it.
I know. I mean, I never thought I would, but here I am. You know, this is a different day and age, and it's relying on the internet isn't something we can do anymore as a people or a country.
The stakes are certainly as big as they can get. Nick Goldberg, can you describe for us at the LA Times anyway, and I suppose it's different in every paper, but how do you come to your opinions? I mean, this is the voice of the paper itself, and that's got a special kind of weight, or was long supposed to and now seems to have again. How do you come to those opinions, Nick? You just take a walk and whatever comes to mind or something else?
No, it's not just whatever comes to mind. Our paper, and I suspect this is true at the Examiner and at the Miami Herald as well. I mean, we have an editorial board. Our editorial board has about 9 people on it. These are mostly former reporters. A couple of them are lawyers. It's a relatively diverse group with a lot of background in a lot of subjects.
And they're separate from the newspaper newsroom where the reporting is going.
Entirely separate from the newsroom. In the newsroom, people are, you know, our reporters are writing objectively as they can, putting their biases aside, trying to present, you know, the facts and all different sides of an issue so that readers can draw their own opinions. In the editorial pages, we're biased. We're allowed to be biased. We make judgments. We draw conclusions based on the fact. So there are 9 of us. We sit around a table. We meet 3 days a week. We talk about these issues. We hash them out. We try to reach consensus. I'm the chairman of the board of that group. But then there's the publisher who is over me, who gets to have a say if he wants to in some of these issues. And together we constitute the voice of the paper. Now, in the old days, to be the voice of the paper meant, you know, to speak for the owner of the paper or the publisher of the paper. These days it's kind of different. Some people say, well, we don't really understand what the editorial page is or who it speaks for. Does it speak for just the people on the board or for all the people who work there or for the people of Los Angeles or for the publisher or the shareholders? And it's a hard question to answer because we're in a changing time. But our positions are hard fought, carefully argued. We have a long body of work behind us. We try to be consistent. We try not to take one position on an issue today and then 6 months later contradict that. We try to be sort of like the Supreme Court, consistent and follow our own principles that we've laid out in previous editorials over previous years.
Nothing mushy about it. I mean, in this series, you are just swinging and swinging hard. You write, you actually wrote a note to readers on why you put out this tough series now, and you said there's good reason to believe that Donald Trump will remain the man he was on the campaign trail. And then, pulling no point, you said impulsive, untruthful, narcissistic, ignorant of the limits on presidential power, and woefully unprepared to lead it. You said rather than wait until the public grew inured to the lies, the undermining of democratic institutions, the demagoguery and bluster, we decided to lay out our concerns at length and in detail. No question you did. You write, it's the man himself, his character and temperament that set him apart from his predecessors. So we decided to write instead about how Trump's erratic, impulsive, narcissistic personality manifests itself in his actions in ways that pose a threat to our democracy. And we decided to move ahead because the future of the nation is at stake. That's a whole lot of big judgments in a hurry, Nick.
I don't think it's in a hurry.
No, I mean in one page. In one page, let me put it that way.
Yeah. Look, we took the chief argument of this series was that, you know, we disagree with Donald Trump on a lot of policy issues, from immigration to climate change to pollution to Obamacare. But you know what? We would have disagreed with any Republican president on those issues, and we've had Republican presidents before, and we've written about them, and we've expressed our differences, and we believe that these are things that should be argued out. Sometimes you have to be strong-voiced. Other times you have to be, you know, careful and conciliatory, but that's one way of being. But we think that in the case of Trump, there's something really different, and that the problem with Trump is not so much his policy positions, but his character. That he's erratic, as we said, and reckless and petulant and, you know, self-involved and untruthful, and that these things make him a very different, very dangerous kind of president. And that is what it was that we felt forced our hand into writing really, really harshly about him.
Let me bring in Ron from Madison, Wisconsin. Forgive me, Nick. Ron in Madison, you're on the air.
Yes, thanks, Tom, for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a lifelong Republican for more than 50 years. I supported Billy Goldwater back in those days. But I don't support Trump. And one of the things that scares me about him, and I'm so glad people are reading newspapers about this now, is that he makes me think so much about George Orwell's 1984.
What do you mean?
The government used something called newspeak, where they twisted facts around something they call alternative facts. That's what it's called today. But he twists things around so much that we need to have a public press that really brings out the truth.
Nancy Ankrum, respond to that. Do you feel an extra weight right now?
Yes, I do. Because the rubric fake news is something we have to fight. We have to stand up to. We have to push back against. We are seeing here at the Herald more and more letter writers sending us rants and some speaking with civility, but accusing us of fake news. We have to make clear that facts and information and opinions with which you disagree are not fake news. They are opinions with which you disagree. And if you can make the case, if you can make the counter case, you're more than welcome to write that. We will happily publish that. But we will not publish accusations of fake news. So yes, the caller is right. There is extra pressure on us. There is an extra obligation, one that I think that we have always hewed to, but an extra obligation to get it right and to also push back against an allegation of fake news.
Tim, how do you feel in the saddle when you see Nick Goldberg's paper, the LA Times, coming out so profoundly, fundamentally critical of this president, his very character itself? They take it all the way down to that. And describe it as a threat to our democracy. And then on the other hand, you're watching him and you're judging, you know, on this issue and that issue, and you're prepared to, I guess, in a sense, work with, editorially mm-hmm. speaking, this man. The LA Times, a very different decision.
And I have to wonder. I mean, that's a very valuable thing. What Nick is arguing is all stuff that was very relevant before he got elected. This is an argument for why Donald Trump should not have been elected. And it's not one that I disagreed with, either during the primaries, or it's why, as the editorial page, we didn't even endorse. We, you know, in 2008, we endorsed John McCain. In 2012, we endorsed Mitt Romney. In 2016, we didn't even endorse in the general election. All of those arguments about his character are central to why that is. But I don't see them as being as useful or productive now.
But the he's in office now. He's got power now. I mean,
he's got power now, but he's a 70-year-old man who has been this way since he is six. In fact, he sort of behaves like he is still six.
But he was never president before.
But that's the thing. His character is not going to change. And so to inform the people that this is what he's like is very valuable. So I won't question why they published it. But from our perspective of trying to see government is a very dangerous thing, especially the federal government. We want to try to steer them in the right direction.
Well, I mean, in the right hands, many would say it can be a very positive thing. But
yes, I mean, like a flame, it can do very good things and it can do very bad things. And so we try to steer them in the right direction. And sadly, Donald Trump's character is not something that anybody is going to set back onto a proper course.
So Tim Carney's paper, The Washington Examiner, lives with it, deals with it. Judges here and there, LA Times may as well, but they've made some pretty profound judgments about the implications of the Trump character, and those are coming out in print. Our Dishonest President is the book form of that. Nick Goldberg joins us there, editorial page editor. Nancy Ankrum is with us, editorial page editor at the Miami Herald. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with editorial page editors about the presidency of Donald Trump, how they weigh it, how they judge it. Nancy Ankrum is with us from Miami, editorial page editor at the Miami Herald. Timothy Carney. Tim Carney's here from the Washington Examiner, commentary editor there. Nick Goldberg with us from the Los Angeles Times, editorial page editor there. Different tacks in each of these cases, but strong editorials in a time when people appear to be looking for that. We're going to look before this hour is out at three CNN staffers who have taken their leave, who have quit after a story that turns out to have gone wrong. Lots of callers for the three of you, Nancy, Nick, Tim, Paul in Boston. Thank you for calling, Paul. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I read the editorials in the Boston Globe daily because they're so informative and thought-provoking. And, for instance, I read just very recently about we should just let Trump, we shouldn't impeach him because then we'll have a whole generation of pro-wealthy Republicans ruling the country. We should just let him run his course of 4 years and we'll be in such low despair that we will have realized our errors of our way.
I mean, I don't know if you got that verbatim, but the LA Times says threat to democracy right now.
What does it say?
A threat to democracy right now.
Yes, he is a threat. But the problem is, if impeachment were to happen, then it would just go to Mike Pence, the vice president, to be president, and it would have. And the Boston Globe was saying that like they'd be entrenched for a generation. So, but Trump would create such a disastrous situation during the 4 years that. We'll swing back to Democrat.
Yeah. I got to pause. You like the nuance there, reading your hometown paper, the Boston Globe. One more, and I'll bring it to you, Nancy. Jim in Omaha, Nebraska. Jim, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My concern is that a lot of these editorials you're talking about are really just preaching to the choir, because I suspect a lot of the Trump base is really not even reading the Post or the Times, and so they're missing a lot of that target audience that they should be talking to. Thanks.
Yeah, I appreciate your call, Jim. Nancy Ankrum, I mean, you talked about, to some extent, reflecting the views and concerns of your community. Is that tantamount to preaching to the choir? Are newspapers, you know, they've got sort of dedicated readerships, even if they've grown recently, but they don't get outside their turf?
Not really. We have to preach to our community. Yes, we have to, well, not preach to, we do have to take in account who our community is, because that's our base. That's our base. We do not pander to them. Yes, we have to call it as we see it, and then we rely on our readers to call it as they see it. One thing that we are troubled by is not so much Donald Trump as president, but the fact that he has given how his demeanor, his rhetoric, his tone has given a permission slip all the way down the line to the governors of many Republican-led states, to the state legislatures, to also have at it. And again, that is where we think our voice is strongest. So we find ourselves addressing Senator Marco Rubio or a Representative Carlos Curbelo or a Governor Scott or our legislature. We have the opposite challenge from the Washington Examiner. You know, for 8 years, we felt that we had an administration in place in the White House where we were actually listened to. Maybe they actually read us and took our opinion into account. We feel now that there is an administration in place that doesn't care what we have to say, which is why we have to pitch our voice very often to the people who purportedly care about Florida the most, which is why we question, say, a Senator Rubio's stance on health care reform and Obamacare repeal, given that he comes from a community that, as I said before, is ground zero. So we're pitching our voice in a different direction.
Let's go to Tampa, the other side of your state. Dallas is calling. Dallas, you're on with Nancy Ankrum in Miami and Nick and Tim in L.A. and Washington. What do you see, Dallas?
Hi, Tom. I think the media in general, which is mostly liberal, has been highly critical of Donald Trump, and they don't cut him any slack whatsoever. We have to I voted for Obama. I voted for Al Gore. I'm an independent.
Okay.
But I think that Donald Trump has actually got some basically good ideas about trying to improve the country's business structure, trying to do some infrastructure issues that we want to cover. And the concept that America first is not necessarily inherently bad. I think that he means well, and he's not as polished as many other politicians, and I think we have to take that into account and understand that this guy has never been elected to any office. He's always run a business for most of his life and been quite successful with it, and so we have to give him a little bit of a break, I think.
Dallas, let me pick it up. Nick, let me take that to you. And you know, it's not the first time you'll hear some Trump supporters say, wait a minute, I get it, he's rough-hewn and all the rest, but be careful of burying the germ of opportunity here to get something different out of Washington that we are frustrated with.
Well, people are frustrated, it's true. We heard, you know, when we wrote our series, we got a lot of people saying to us, you're rushing to judgment. Donald Trump has only been in office for 70-some days. You've already determined that he's going to, you know, drag the country, you know, down into disaster. That's not fair. And of all the criticisms we got, I mean, I thought that was the most reasonable. We did draw harsh judgments early in a presidential term, and we then went on to write after that that, you know, this wasn't our final judgment. We're going to keep watching this man. He's done things that we, too, agree are not that bad. You know, when he backed off on his Dreamers stuff, we were pleased about that. There were a couple of healthcare ideas he had that we liked. There were some, and frankly, on the guy from Boston called in to talk about impeachment. We've also written an editorial since our series came out saying that we too don't think it's time for impeachment. We don't think that, you know, there's evidence of sufficiently high crimes to merit moving forward right at this moment with a process that would tear the country apart. So, you know, I agree there are things still to be watched. I also agree that just because Donald Trump is rough-hewn and just because he doesn't talk like a typical politician, that those aren't necessarily negatives, and they could be positives. Mm. But at the same time, to us, he's shown a lot of signs of irresponsibility. He's shown signs of demagoguery. He has reminded us of the importance of all those things that we usually, you know, don't take that seriously, like being, you know, open to other people's ideas and valuing the institutions of democracy and the rule of law. So to us, he seems dangerous.
Dangerous, the word from the LA Times. Tim Carney at the Washington Examiner, still looking for upside here when he can find it. Nancy Ankrum in Miami, the Miami Herald. Looking across the whole spectrum, I'm grateful to each of you for being with us this hour. Nancy, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Nick Goldberg, their series comes out in Our Dishonest President July 4th. Thank you, as a book. Nick, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
Tim Carney, the Washington Examiner commentary editor there. Thank you so much, Tim.
Thank you for having me.
In a moment, we will look at the resignations of three CNN journalists over a retracted story regarding Russia and the Trump camp. This is On Point. Three staffers at CNN have resigned after the publication and subsequent retraction of a story last week that linked a member of President Trump's transition team to the investigations related to Russia. The network said it could not stand by the reporting. Joining me now to discuss what happened and what went wrong is Eric Wemple, media columnist for The Washington Post, which has been doing a lot of its own two-fisted reporting lately. Eric Wemple, welcome to On Point.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. Very much appreciate it.
It's good to have you. Remind us what happened here and who resigned. These were not minor figures in the world of journalism.
No, not at all. Okay, so last Thursday night, CNN published a story saying that the Senate Intelligence Committee was investigating a certain Trump ally, Anthony Scaramucci, sort of a Wall Street figure.
Yeah.
Saying that he was, he had met with a Russian banker, a Russian fund manager back in January during the presidential transition. Scaramucci was supposed to become a Trump administration official, but he didn't. That never happened. Anyhow, so the CNN story basically swung on a single anonymous source. They said that this stuff was happening, and then it got bombed by Breitbart and other people saying there are factual mistakes. The fund that was the subject of the story issued said there were factual inaccuracies and cited one pretty important one. And so CNN, pretty quickly, I must say, retracted the story, disappeared it from its site, apologized to Scaramucci, and then over the weekend conducted a quick Twitch internal investigation about the entire thing. And then Monday afternoon, we learned that three CNN employees had resigned pretty much over this. And that they are Eric Leishblau, who is a pretty decorated Pulitzer Prize winner from the New York Times that just recently came to CNN.
Yeah.
Lex Harris, who oversees CNN's investigations unit, which is a pretty big deal. And Thomas Frank, who actually was the lead author on the story itself. So these are, you know, mid-late career
heavyweight, serious journalists here.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, we're not here to throw stones. These things can happen, and yet, clearly, they and CNN itself not at all happy with apparently getting it wrong. How do you think this happened, Eric? I mean, you know how investigations work, and you know these are not. These are not casual journalists. These are serious people. How do you think this happened?
Well, Tom, what I think is particularly compelling about this case, and if there's one thing your listeners come away with, I'd like it to be this, that CNN retracted the story but hasn't said just what parts of the story were wrong. The story has many different facets, talking about, you know, meetings and possible collusion and possible motives. And a couple of things appear to be wrong, but CNN has not told its own viewers, its own readers, what exactly is wrong with the story. And a CNN source that I talked to said, no, we're not bailing on the entire story.
Okay.
We're just saying that it didn't comply with our procedures for such a sensitive story. And it's unclear whether CNN will re-report and re-present this story. So, you know, there's a lot of accountability in this particular episode.
Maximal. They're out.
Yeah, but not that much transparency, because I think that CNN should tell us, you know, okay, well, we got this right, this wrong, this right, that, this wrong,
yep.
Because
yep.
They did publish a story. And I think it's best practice for an outlet to leave a version of the original story somewhere with the full signpost saying this is wrong, 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 but in case you want to see just how bad we screwed up, here you go. This is a long debate in journalism. Is that just how to handle mistakes?
But they're taking. I mean, their accountability is clear here. These guys are out. How do you understand that? Can we just? They're gone. Are they fired? Were they?
Well, you know,
or they walked away because of their honor.
I pressed on that, and the answer that I got was, they're, you know, laudable, honorable journalists who step forward and said, submit my resignation. But I said, come on, really? You know, come on. And they're like, well, you should know that, it was at the end of a long discussion.
Yeah.
So we can read between those lines, can we not?
I mean, another way to go here would have been to say, we got this piece of it wrong. We're still investigating the rest and hanging there with the team. Is this a sign that we have heard Donald Trump attack CNN again and again and again? Does the president have them kind of on the run, on the ropes here?
Undoubtedly. Not necessarily on the run. I think that, you know, there have been some mistakes in CNN, and I think those are problematic, as are mistakes with anybody or any news outlet. But I think CNN is undeservedly slandered by Donald Trump, as are other media outlets. I think that, you know, it's a reliable place. It's a fact-run place. And I think that this only further cements that. But, yes, I do think, Tom, that they overreacted in this particular instance because of the pressure applied by Trump. They say that's not the case, but I don't buy it. I think that they are in a very optical or a political sort of bind stemming from the president's constant attacks and, more importantly, the sort of backlash that comes from the supporters given Trump's constant attacks, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. Are they fixing a credibility threat? Are they addressing a legal threat, a threat of legal action? Do you know?
You know, I don't think so. I don't think so. You know, Scaramucci is a highly public figure. Exactly what's going on with this investigation is something that's a little hard to report. I don't think that, and usually when people leave because of legal threats, those things take a little longer than one weekend, right?
Yeah,
I mean, Scaramucci gets his lawyers involved, his
right.
CNN lawyers
talk.
Get involved. That tape, exactly. Talk. Right.
Yep.
Letter.
Yeah.
You know, courier.
So that means the leverage here, the short hairs, they had him somehow. I mean, CNN felt it immediately and acutely, and they felt the need to right now take action, even though you suggest that there may have been parts of the story that weren't wrong.
Right. I mean, I don't, you know, I think CNN says that. I'll have to look back at my notes again, but I think they're pretty clear about, no, you know, we're not making any representations about what parts of the story are or are not right. We just, this does not comply with our standards and parts of what we were concerned with, so we did this.
Eric Wemple, media columnist with The Washington Post. Thanks for lighting this up for us, Eric. Great to have you with us for a minute here.
It's a pleasure to be on. Thank you so much.
Three big journalists out at CNN after a story in some part, apparently, gone wrong. It takes journalists to find the news. It takes the courage to go out there. Sometimes we get it wrong. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.